It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along with Daniel Pryor today. The Sound Mind broadcast going strong for a couple of years now. And once again, the man who brings it to us each week, Daniel Pryor, sitting in the chair with a bright orange shirt today.
Kind of a coral
shirt. Yeah, okay. Coral. Does that contribute to a sound mind and good mental health? Well, we're going to find out what are some of the things that do contribute to a sound mind. Yeah. And you're kind of a back to basic show this week.
Yeah. And we actually touched on this, I think, in a previous show just recently, but we'll go a little further here. Back to basics. And before I start, I want to thank listeners. I just really appreciate it. I get so much positive feedback off of these radio shows. And so it is a ministry. It's not sponsored by Coca-Cola or anybody like that, anybody big. Mm-hmm. It's a ministry. You know, I do mention what I do occasionally, but a lot of the stuff that I share is just, it can be taken just as help just the way we share it here on the show. Mm-hmm, so always appreciate that.
And so knowing that it's actually, something out of the show, they don't have to come in for a session. They can get something just out of the show. We hope so.
And so back to the basics, but just talking about mental health in general and this whole idea of what I call treating the label. You know, people too often see a label, a diagnosis, we're talking about mental health diagnosis, as kind of a deal breaker. I think that mental health, you know, if I got this, then, then it's with me for life. And,
in some kind of disorder, you mean?
Yeah.
And like so I've been diagnosed with bipolar or something.
Right.
Like
we've talked
depression.
About, yeah, we've talked about those things before. We've talked about Asperger's and we talked about OCD just recently, just as examples during that previous program. Mental health is just being made too complicated, I think. That's my opinion as a professional in the field here. Mental health, I just want to clarify a couple of things. And mental health, like anything mental, is a response to a perceived environment. So our mental process, just a response to a perceived environment, could be, external or internal. The mental health industry categorizes what they suppose or what it supposes are the possible responses or over-responses. And, of course, they miss some things. And this book that we have, that it keeps getting thicker and thicker and thicker with new diagnoses that they can find. These are, again, just ways of categorizing the what they suppose to be the possible responses in terms of disorder, the possible over-responses or inappropriate responses to just environment. And so to take those categorizations, which are somewhat contrived to begin with, they're not objective, they're subjective. And so to take those and treat them as though they're objective is a mistake, and I think we're going down the wrong path. Mm. A response to a perceived environment, we've talked about behaviors, emotions, or beliefs, emotions, behaviors, and that is an order that that happens. Every behavior is preceded by an emotion, which is preceded by a belief, and so underlying a lot of the what they call mental health disorders is this order of belief, emotion, behavior. So sometimes the mental health disorder is an observed behavior that is perceived to be an overreaction or over-response, or it could be an emotional that's an overreaction or over-response. But seldom do they get back to the beliefs. And, of course, the medication isn't going to change the belief, and so it isn't going to get to the root of the problem. Beliefs are persuasions. There could be narrative or neurologic. What do I mean by a neurologic persuasion? Just a pathway that just a repeated pattern that, you know, some people have a form of homeostasis for kind of a surge of, they get used to a surge of adrenaline, and you find that they're kind of type A personalities. They're always angry, and that can become habitual.
Mm-hmm. So beliefs can become almost kind of a physical thing that happens because the brain adapts.
Yeah, I've often used the illustration of when I talk, I use my hands a lot, which is a behavior. Mm-hmm. So you'd say, well, Dan, according to your theory, then that's preceded by an emotion and by a belief. What's the belief that makes you? Well, it's not a belief that necessarily has a narrative, but it's a neurological pattern that's repeated. So there's something in my brain that's more comfortable when I'm talking and processing. Something in my brain says, I think you'd be better off if you moved your hands a little bit. And so I
And it would
so
take some I practice, but it can be changed.
Yeah, it can be changed, emotions are correspond to beliefs, and so they solicit behaviors. And behaviors are expressions of who you fundamentally are. That is, your kind of your beliefs. And you look at the word behavior in that word is behave, of course, and so that's behave or have your being or hold your being, and so in one sense we are what we do. So you have this beliefs. Then next is emotions and behaviors. So what really is the issue, and why do we have this growth of mental health industry if we could take a lot of these diagnoses and just follow them back to beliefs, emotions, behaviors? And I say most, if not all, of our mental health diagnoses are rooted in fear and shame, expressions of anger and depression. Because our behaviors are fundamentally defense mechanisms, and we've talked about that before, they're right at the root, these things like fear and shame that have to do with our well-being. When I say fear, we've talked about how that we're all afraid of the same thing, death, but more immediately, things that represent death, value, being valued, having control over situations in life and circumstances that are going to have an impact on me. That's something we all want to do, is have that kind of control, not to control other people, but have that kind of control. And power or resources, we all need resources, and those are fundamental to our safety, our security, and the idea of shame being an internalized message of lack of worth, where it's not the same as feeling guilty about something. We do maybe things, shameful things, because we're already ashamed. But so we want to think of shame as that internalized message of lack of worth. Well, you can see how that probably fundamental to a lot of our emotions and a lot of our behaviors is this whole idea of needing to be valued, needing to have control over circumstances and situations as much as we can, that is, needing to have resources, and overcoming the internalized message of lack of worth. So I refer to these things as an emotional root ball. They would include anger, shame, fear, anxiety, depression. And the reason I refer to that as a root ball is because they're also intertwined, that you can't really take one of those without implying the others and talking about the others. So,
and in our world today, as far as mental health and just health in general, anxiety and depression are fast becoming like the number one health problem, health problem overall, not just mental health, but health.
Oh, yeah, they really do attack your body, sure.
In America, the number one problem. Yeah. So it's definitely an emotional root ball.
Yeah, and those can be, what's the Bible say, that in those last days, men's hearts will fail them because of fear. Mm. And so, the anxiety and depression are responses to fear, and they are types of anger because they're responses to fear and they're responses to shame. And so it's easy to see how that anxiety and depression are certainly pervasive because, you can see the way society is going and the way civilizations are going, and there's increasing fear in the world and instability.
But do you think that this is still an ailment mostly of the Western world, that other parts of the world don't seem to, or maybe they just – they don't have time to diagnose themselves because they're just, a lot of the third world countries are just trying to get clean water. And
yeah, and I think the closer you are to that kind of what we call maybe survival mode, you know, we've said before on the show that before the pharmaceutical companies became giants, work was the medicine for depression.
There you go.
It really does work, you know. My counselor, my wife, has said that the best thing you can do for depression
is
clean,
to get back to work.
Clean the kitchen sinks with Comet, she says. And this is pretty profound. I've even done that to get to, and it really does work.
There you go.
You can see how that a lot of these things, let's take some examples here. Mental health diagnosis are tied to this root ball. You can see that because they do have a root of anxiety and depression. If we read through this list, you'll see how that they're, all of these have something to do with anxiety and depression. And so because they're tied to this emotional root ball, they trap us in what I refer to as the past. You know, not the past in terms of time, but the past in terms of reality. So the past, I would say, the past I'm talking about, which can have to do with time, but more specifically, it has to do with a state of lack of hope, lack of vision, lack of cause and purpose, lack of unfolding of meaning, lack of wonder, lack of objectivity, and other things like that. So mental health diagnosis, insofar as they're tied to this emotional root ball, they also trap us in the past because this emotional root ball traps us in the past. Some examples, I'm just kind of looking through the DSM-5 here. First of all, you have the childhood orders. Things like communication disorder, even ADD, learning disorder, motor disorder, those all have a strong element of anxiety. And they're exacerbated, but increase the anxiety and you increase the symptoms of those disorders. Schizophrenia, all the types of schizophrenia have a strong element of anxiety. And right back at their source, you know, schizophrenia has been proven not to be genetic. None of the twin researches indicate just the opposite. The mood disorders, depression, bipolar, then next you have the anxiety disorders, and then following that you have the obsessive compulsive disorders and attachment disorders, relational attachment disorders. You've got eating disorders, you've got hygiene disorders, then you have sleeping disorders, and then you have sex identification disorders. You've got behavioral disorders. You've got drug and alcohol disorders, delusional disorders. You've got personality disorders, and then you've got sexual deviancy and then some others. And you go down that list and you see every one of those has a strong element of anxiety, that is fear, lack of value, lack of control, lack of power, that emotional root ball, fear, shame, anxiety, depression, anger. This is where the real battle is. That's where the real battle is. And so back to the basics means looking past the label and getting back to the root cause, you know, answering the fear, shame, anxiety, depression.
Back to basics this week on the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. If you need some help getting back to basics, maybe in some things you're facing or a loved one does, and you need some help, how do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, call me at 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169, offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And these programs are podcasted at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with a word regarding the many faces of anger. The key to managing anger is to recognize it when it doesn't look like anger. Otherwise, we find ourselves resisting anger when it wears one face, but then embracing it when it wears another. From personal experience and professional training, I understand this. I can help you recognize the faces of anger and teach you tools of effective management. Contact me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, or call 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along with Daniel Pryor this week on the Sound Mind broadcast. Getting back to basics this week on our program. Daniel, before the break, you were listing all kinds, quite a list of all the disorders and the labels that we put on different problems. Yeah. We have different behavioral problems. But you say if we just get back to basics, we can solve a lot of these issues.
Yeah, we just, as you say, just before the break, we talked about just basically through the the indexing tabs, as it were, of the DSM-5, and just looking at the different categories of diagnosis, and every single one of them that we read, we could see has a very strong element in depression and anxiety. You know, the thing about a lot of these things being genetic, that just has never been proven. If you're reading material that tells you that these are genetic, you need to read further, because the truth about genetics, they're very complicated, and there isn't a gene, any single gene, that is responsible for any behavior.
What about chemicals, though? Chemical problems.
Yeah,
and, so that would be like a physical reason for certain problems.
And,
like I'm thinking more like schizophrenia and bipolar.
And all of the things that we read do have a neurological element to them. And you can even get to the place where that neurological element is so strong that it does require medication. But where the direction that I see us going is not so much the problem of medication, but the problem of taking the addiction, the label, and interpreting that as the problem. When, as we said in the beginning, all these labels are is the APA or the Psychiatric Association taking a name and putting it on a collection of symptoms. So to just call out the name of the symptoms and assign that to myself doesn't help me solve any problems. And the treating, the medications, a lot of times are just treating the label. They're not really treating the symptom, because deep underneath the emotional, the behavioral symptoms are the beliefs and the way that we think. Mm. And that can be shown for, I've even had, not recently, but years ago, before I started my private practice and I was in the public sector, and all the kids I saw had ADD, because that's how they got into these various programs. I'm not a guru on ADD. I don't evaluate kids for ADD. I don't work with I do still work with kids that have ADD, but in my experience as in the public sector of working with kids for 5 years, families with kids that all were diagnosed with ADD, and I didn't meet one ADD kid who was coming from a home where the parents were calm, collected, nurturing, problem-solving parents. The ADD was always exacerbated in every case that I saw by the fact that the parents were overwhelmed. Now, you could easily draw the conclusion, well, then it's genetic. The parents have it and the kids have it. But a stronger research says these are modeled. They're modeling a lot of this. You know, so is there a chemical reality there? Yeah, certainly there is. But I don't think the root cause of ADD. You know, a lot of people who are quote unquote ADD turn out to be your inventors, your genius type of person. So without the medication, or without the stigma, or without the anxiety and depression over it, would we be medicating it? You know, so we've sort of created a whole other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go.
How do we escape? Because you say a lot of this is living in the past.
Yeah,
has roots in past depression and past problems.
And so let me again just clarify what I mean by the past. The past can be the past in time, but it doesn't always have to be that. It's more important, I think, and when we're talking about the time in terms of this context, that the time represents this state of lack of hope, lack of vision. Now, of course, if I'm living in the time past, these are all true, because why would I live in the past? Well, because I have no future, so there's no other place to live, and that would represent lack of hope. Well, that makes sense, because if there's hope, I'm looking toward the future. Lack of vision, again, looking toward the future. Purpose, again, looking toward the future. Lack of purpose. Lack of unfolding meaning, that whole idea of unfolding meaning in life, that life is, I'm continually learning. And so there, again, looking toward the future. So there is a time element, but we're really talking about lack of hope, vision, purpose, cause, meaning, lack of wonder in life, lack of objectivity. So these are things that when I talk about living in the past and we want to get away from those things, we want to move toward hope, vision, purpose and cause, meaning, wonder, objectivity, those kinds of things. So how do we do that? So simply put, and I do mean simply put because it's not easy, but it's simple,
right.
We've said before. We have to learn to live outwardly. We live in a society, and it's becoming more and more global, except in some of the areas which we brought up, some of these areas where they're constantly at that
survival
mode. They're not likely to be an egocentric society.
Have time to have depression.
Yeah, that's exactly true. They don't have time to dwell on the things that they should have had but don't have. They're just,
right.
You know, in survival, you're making do. And you know, people that have grown up in hard times or in large families where there wasn't a lot, you know, they'll look back and tell you those were some of the best times in their life, that, you know, we've kind of worked ourselves into a frenzy about owning and getting and possessing, mm-hmm. and keeping up. And we've gone the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. We've kind of creating these mental healths. But getting away from the past, escaping the past, you know, we have to learn to live outward. We have to make my life a mission and a ministry to other people. And I don't see a lot of people who are suffering deeply from anxiety and depression who at the same time have made their life a ministry and a mission to others. It's not easily done or maintained. You know, what it requires is a community of like-minded missionaries, and that's why it's so important. Again, people that I counsel who are circling in this fog of depression and anxiety and anger and fear and shame are people who will also say, I don't have any friends. I hear that so often.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be other-minded. It's more blessed to give than to receive. What that means is you're happier when you give than when you receive. There's a blessing in giving. You know, when you give, your immune system is positively affected when you give to other people. When you're giving to someone, you can feel the change in your body and in your mind. So other-centered, mission, my life is a mission, a ministry to others. My life is not my own. It wasn't given to me to be selfish with. It was given to me to serve other people. And when we started getting that mindset, there will still be trials, but here's the thing. You know, when we're in a ministry, when we're in a communion of like-minded missionaries, and that's absolutely fundamental. We have to find church. I hope my prayer is that, you know, that churches will arise where people can actually feel that this is my family. We've sort of missed that. There are some good churches and maybe many good churches, but I often hear people saying that, yeah, they're going to church, but they don't really feel a part of it. They don't even, and it's not as simple as just simply signing up to be involved. That can be part of it. But sometimes some of the larger churches and sometimes even smaller churches, they miss the intimacy. The people don't get to know one another on an intimate level. So it requires that that community. Then I say there will still be trials, but you know, we'll be seeing them hopefully through that lens. All things work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose.
Okay, well, some closing thoughts here then on getting out of the past and getting back to basics.
Well, here's some closing thoughts. In treating the label, we're really missing, I think, the issue altogether. So back to the basics means we need to forget about the labels. When people come in and tell me, give me a list of things they've been diagnosed with, it really kind of goes in one ear and out the other, because I'm going to deal with the symptoms, not the label, and we're going to get to the root causes, and we're going to get healing there. The label is meaningless. It doesn't represent anything. It represents a pill, but I don't do that, and so I just look past that. We work with the symptoms and their causes, not the label. As relatively difficult as it seems compared to taking a medication, the way out of this fog we've been talking about, the past, is to learn life coping skills, hone them for your own personal use. You know, you have to take these things that we talk about in counseling, and they have to be sometimes modified so that they actually fit in your life. Faith is fundamental. Faith that all things work together. You know, faith requires a walk with God. It's not something we have it's not something we have external or in lieu of or in addition to our walk with God. It is our walk with God. Requires reading His Word, prayer, and fellowship. Faith, fundamental. Commitment or contentment, I mean, is fundamental. Other-centeredness and task orientation, those are all fundamental. Faith, contentment, other-centeredness, task orientation.
What do you mean by a task orientation?
Well, there's two ways that we grow our world. And by when I say grow our world, I'm talking about leaving the past behind and moving into the future. And those two ways are basically God's two institutions, work and relationship. So when we're escaping the past, the things we're talking about here, they all imply moving toward relationships and moving toward task orientation. We have to do work in order to feel of value, having control, and having power. Hmm. We have to do things. So this is one of the things that we talk a lot about in counseling.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to the basics, looking past the label. Forget the label. We don't need the labels. We're dealing with that emotional root ball and the causes of that.
Okay, well, if people have been getting lots of labels put on them, or they know somebody who has and things aren't working, they'd like to maybe try a different approach. Bible-based counselor Daniel Pryor to the rescue, and he can give you some tips on how to get your life back on track. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
They can call me at 425-778-6169 or email me through the website, offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And again, these shows are podcasted at that website, so you can go back and review.
At BibleBasedCounselor.com. Okay, great stuff as always. Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.